I said, do you think she's good looking? Because I wasn't sure. And you said, this is brilliant. You said she's got very violent eyebrows.
I couldn't think of any other way. She had eyebrows like you, Jimbo, which is fine, but on a girl, it's a bit weird.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. It's the Christmas special. That's right, the time is upon us and we're in a festive spirit. And James or Jim is with me.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
But we don't have producer Pete with us. He's up north building a snowman.
Yeah. We're self-produced today.
Yeah, I think it's some sort of pagan festival they have up north, isn't it?
With this Christmas trees and that kind of
thing. They do lots of things up north, James.
Mostly mining
chips, chips and gravy.
Right,
and
speak.
Hope that's easier to do than it is to say.
Mining Hovis, I imagine.
Well, this, as it is the
at the risk of isolating literally half of our listener base.
I'm just saying that's what Pete's doing.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's looking for orts.
We're going to be looking back on 2008 and maybe even looking forward to 2009.
Yeah.
If you're a keen bettor, then get your pencils out.
Because that's what they call bettors. If you're a keen bettor.
Keen bettor.
Yeah, it's a new breed of gambler, ready for the new year. Chaps, what are your highlights of 2008? Fire away.
Personally, I don't know if it's my main highlight or what, but a big highlight for me has been England being good again, just being good to watch again. Because Yellow's really done a great job. They've got not just got the points on the board, but they've actually been enjoyable to watch. Like obviously, especially the Croatia game, but that carried through into the Belarus game, and just recently they've been just really, really good to watch.
Well, we said even that after
like, after the Germany game as well, like winning even big friendlies like that. I mean, it means nothing if you win it, but it damages morale to lose it. You know, if you look back to the France game, which is was around a year ago, is that right?
I'm pretty sure Capello's about a year in charge.
I mean there was a lot of doom mongering even then, and it's brilliant that he's turned it around from that initial sort of negativity, and he's even managed to get the press on side, which is tough for England managers.
I think with the press thing, I just think he genuinely doesn't care. He's very much of the attitude of, you know, this is what I've done in the game. You know, he's afforded the luxury of actually being a really good coach with a really good proven track record. So he's obviously he's sort of said it, but it's been unsaid, if you like, to the press. If you want to come with us, fair enough, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't think I'm going to be playing games and walking out of press conferences because you pissed me off. It's not going to happen.
It helps that his support act was pretty piss poor.
Oh, exactly. Of course. No, that definitely plays a part. But, I mean, you know, his honeymoon period would probably, definitely be over by now. So, yeah. I mean, how long did McLaren have in the job? 18 months?
But did McLaren have a honeymoon period? Because everyone was, you know...
No, he didn't.
I mean, you scraped a draw in the home match against
right,
Czech Republic, and people were like, bloody...
But if Capello did have a honeymoon period, what I'm saying is it's almost certainly over.
Definitely, yeah. No, he's well and truly settled into the job now.
And the bottom is, I mean, they call me old-fashioned, but if you keep winning games, if you win every game, you're not going to get anything.
Capello's installed that. He said results are what it's all about.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds the stupidest thing to say, but it is. And the performances will follow. You start winning games, you get the confidence. I mean, this is basics, absolute basics.
It was the France game again where he saw what the problem was, because he knew the players were better than that from training, but he could see that because they played well for half an hour, he can get them to play for the full 90 minutes.
Yeah,
he's such a smart manager that he's
a man with a method, isn't he? He kind of turns up and goes, right, okay, there's a bit of a problem here with you boys being a bit slack. Okay, I want you to wear shirt and tie. I don't want you turning up late for this. I want you to be disciplined in all these little areas. Now you get onto the pitch, and as you say, training, okay, you're doing well there. On a match, I see where the problems are.
Because
he knows, he reads the game.
He's been there. This is the thing. I think Jimbo's right. I'd like to build on it by saying, it seems that, and obviously we don't have a massive amount of experience of being followers of another country. We don't have any experience, but it seems like we actually hit rock bottom, and it happened in the early 90s with under Taylor. You know, who isn't a
that's bad? Right,
he
that's
wasn't
right.
always a bad
well you were 96 came along at the perfect time
exactly
so we probably wouldn't have qualified for that tournament had we not been hosting it and got through
but we actually did okay. And so what will happen now is we will do our Celtic part. I don't know if it's a big difference between getting to the semi-final of a tournament or winning the tournament. We all know that. You've got to go the extra mile.
Of course.
But I mean, what do you do when your national team is a laughing stock throughout the world and you've hit rock bottom? You hire someone like Fabio Capello.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's probably if he's not the greatest coach in world football, he's definitely in the top three. Hmm. And it's a subjective point, but it's a valid one, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been a great highlight. I think also I'd like to say, I mean, I'm going to say that Portsmouth winning the FA Cup was a personal highlight, but also, for obvious reasons, but also it was good that a team outside the top four won it, because that's not happened for a long time, you know. And Portsmouth, okay, had a lucky run, they had one good result at Old Trafford.
Beat Man United at Old Trafford on the way, however contentious that game was.
And Portsmouth hammered them that day, didn't they?
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, but I'd like to think about what I would say to that.
They won it at the end of the day.
You need that sort of luck.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you said moments ago, it's all about results.
Of course it is. And it's been a long time. I think it's 14 or 15 years since a side that wasn't in the so-called Big Four in quotes won the FA Cup. I'd like to think everyone who likes football enjoyed that result.
Apart from
people who...
I mean, the fact that you were playing Cardiff in the final, it's fantastic.
West Brom in the semi.
Well, the semis were Cardiff...
West Brom and Barnsley, wasn't it?
Barnsley and Portsmouth.
That's right,
So, Barnsley knocked out Chelsea and Liverpool, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a shame Barnsley never got to the final itself. But still, it was an incredible FA Cup.
Oh, it was a good season for the FA Cup. I mean, I
Havant and Waterlooville, how good was that?
That was class.
Yeah. I mean, they took the lead at Anfield twice. Yeah. That's really something. Could you imagine that?
That was. I think.
Hull only took the lead once the other week.
Hull took the lead twice, didn't they?
Well, they went 2-0.
They improved on the lead.
Okay.
But I mean, I think Hull are worth a mention for this year. I mean, they're back in 2008, so that's in this season. They've been brilliant.
They've played brilliantly. That's the thing. They've come up. There's a lot of West Brom fans were saying, oh, we play really, really good football. I think it will keep us up. No one thought it was going to be Hull that were doing that. And that they are playing really genuine, decent football.
They are. I didn't
know some good
one
players in Giovanni, Marlon King. Those players have really stood up.
I think it's better. The defence have played well as well.
Yeah.
That Nighill's a good keeper.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Dawson and Turner at the back are also really good. And I don't think I remember seeing, I mean, including obviously present company, I don't remember seeing anyone or hearing anyone say Hull would stay up. It was almost like they were written off, right? They're down.
Yeah, definitely.
So what other two clubs are going down, you know? Because they came up for the playoffs and they had a bit of an unproven.
I saw them play last season. I was at Hull's ground and I thought to myself that they're not a bad side, but as you said, I thought, I don't know though. But it's just remarkable how they proved everyone wrong.
They had a storming run to get into the playoffs and stay in the position and get up, and they've just carried it on.
But they've also signed players. They've also signed a lot of players in the summer, which you have to do.
Giovanni was a fantastic signing because he was at Barcelona and obviously wasn't getting games at City, and there were questions about his attitude. But that is a real smart piece of work from Phil Brown.
You can see Newcastle
trying to poach Phil Brown within a few
seasons. Do you think he's entice Giovanni in? He said, "Well, actually, they do call our stadium the New Camp of the North."
Yeah.
And he's like,
today? Of course, Barcelona.
Yeah,
that'll do. That's what Sam Mann used to call Cardiff, the Barcelona of Northern Europe.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, he used to call them that. Yeah, he used to refer to them in press conferences and stuff.
With a bit of irony in there?
But I think, Sam Mann's a reasonably deluded man, so maybe not. But I'd like to think that Phil Brown's taken Giovanni, and he's obviously thought, right, if I can get this player's head right, he could be a real asset, you know. No one else wants to touch him.
Yeah.
Pompey have done a bit of that.
He hasn't got his heading right though. Didn't see him the other week.
That's probably the only thing he can't.
It's like firing him out of a cannon or something.
But Hull have been refreshing. I mean, listen, I'll tell you what. I'm sorry to keep half mad at Portsmouth. But when we went to the KC Stadium, we drew 1-1. I was gutted. I thought that's 3 points lost. We dropped 2 points there.
Yeah.
Now I look back at it, it's a fucking good result. But we drew against them at home as well.
But it's Hull's away form though. I think that they've embraced the Premiership and they absolutely love
they're
going.
They're playing without fear.
They love going on the road. They don't go to the Emirates and go, oh, I tell you what. Let's just keep it to 3-0.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They go, hey, here we go, we're on. This is our first season ever in the top flight. Before this season, they were the biggest city in the whole of Europe to not have their team in the top flight.
That's a true fact.
But on a personal level, I met Phil Brown before they went, and he's a top bloke.
Yeah.
And it just makes it even better.
Oh, brilliant.
That's the case.
But I would say, I mean, just back on your boys' point, look at a couple of weeks ago, they got a credible draw at Anfield. Okay, I mean it wasn't they beat Arsenal at the Emirates. I mean, but a draw at Anfield nonetheless is a good result. I mean, Man United probably would be gutted.
Well, Liverpool would.
But listen,
up there,
they went there 0-0. They fucking went for it. 1-0. They went for it. 2-0. They went for it. They got paid back to 2-0. They were still going for it.
But those two goals you saw shouldn't have counted. Well, I mean, there was a lot of pushing and shoving.
Brown was disappointed, I think, wasn't he? He doesn't normally come out. He's quite a good guy. He doesn't normally come out and criticise. But I could tell he was a bit gutted.
They seem reasonably disciplined side as well, Hal.
A hard working team, yeah.
Yeah, but as in a fair play sense.
Yeah.
There don't seem too many players that are spouting off all the time.
I can think of, no.
No.
I think you're probably right, yeah. Yeah, listen, they've been a real pleasure to watch, I think, so far this season. And I think hopefully they'll continue to 2009. And they're not going to get relegated, and they'll do okay. No. So that's good. And let's see what they can do next season.
I just hope they don't fall afoul of what Reading fell afoul of, which is a similar situation where the second season they just sort of go into freefall. But
they get found out.
Phil Brown, from what we've seen so far, I think he might have enough about him to sort of build on it.
They'll get found out. What happens is, it happened with Reading, it happened with Ipswich, it also happened with Portsmouth.
Yeah.
You get a real benefit of it's a small consolation because it's a tough division, but you get the sort of benefit of being an unknown quantity for a good few months.
Yeah.
You know, and next season they will get found out. But I mean, the bottom line is, if they get into Europe, okay, which could happen depending on who wins the cups, they could finish seventh. And if the right people win the cups, they'll be in the UEFA Cup next season, or the Europa League, whatever it's going to be called, some ridiculous name. But that could really hurt them. Yeah, that could really hurt them, you know, because they probably won't be able to trap players, and they won't be able to have the resources, and they may do an Ipswich and go down again, which would be a shame.
It's definitely a negative thing for sides like that going straight into Europe.
But I mean, it's all conjecture. We don't know what's going to happen. But yeah, it's been good. Hull been great.
Luke, what was one of your highlights of 2008?
Well, apart from the FA Cup win for Portsmouth, my big highlight actually was probably Euro 2008.
Well, of course, yeah, it had to be mentioned.
I do think it was. I have to caveat that by saying it was a shame England weren't there, but it was a fantastic tournament.
Oh, it was a lovely tournament.
It was the best tournament in a long, long time.
Going
as far back as Italian 90. It was just, it was fantastic. There was so much good football on display. Mm. And obviously, I think England not being there allowed us all to be a bit more objective. I think Spain were everyone's second side, and it honestly felt to me like the good guys had won. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of likeable players in the Spain squad that we're very familiar with. And it was just really, really good that the team playing such great football won out in the end.
The right team did win.
Oh, from start to finish, they were fantastic. I mean, Holland started off really well. They were absolutely unbelievable in the group stages, and we all enjoyed that, you know, as we said at the time, they tailed off. Obviously, they got out-Hollanded by Russia.
I think a lot of people fancy Croatia to do well.
Oh yeah, I like Croatia.
I mean, Turkey as well. I was going to say, awesome. There were so many brilliant little stories within Euro 2008. It was
a tournament of a lot of goals. I think it had about 2.5 goals a game on average.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But that Croatia v Turkey, the quarter final, when Croatia scored in the last minute of extra time and they all ran round, we're through. And then Turkey went up the other end, and there was just a genuine moment of, well, what happens now? Have you won or have we lost? Because it feels like you've won and we've lost.
And tournaments' names are made on that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
That's what sticks to your mind. I think, we were talking actually a bit earlier on the way to doing this tonight. We were talking about the Spanish midfield, which is magnificent, and Villa. And it's a shame actually. What we didn't say, I didn't say to you earlier, which I meant to say, was it was a real shame that Villa missed the final. Actually, he went off after about half an hour in the semi, didn't he? But was it some sort of like strain or something?
He was really gracious and dignified about it, though.
Nothing
and
what do,
another
it?
Thing I thought was brilliant about Spain is there were 13 first team players in that side. You cannot take away the roles of Cesc Fabregas and Dani Guita.
Yeah,
they were both so important to that side. And those regular substitutions really just, they flipped the games on their head and they gave Spain the edge.
I think you're right.
Xavi Alonso didn't really get a look in.
He didn't. Yeah.
You know, and
when he did play, it was awesome as well. Ruben de la Red as well. They had such a strong squad. In the last group game, if I remember rightly, they played a few more sort of like what you'd call squad players.
Even then, they were
sublime.
What I think was good for Spain was they've got some big names, but they're not massive names. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, they're not Cristiano.
Galacticos.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that, but what I think is they're not big egos. They're big names.
Well, okay, yeah.
I probably think that someone like Fernando Torres and those sort of people, he'd probably be quite a good bloke. You know, they're all team players, is what I mean. I mean, that the way they switched, because it was what I thought was going to happen. Basically, is that Villa limped off in the semi. They went through, obviously. I thought, you know what, it's going to fuck him up. Their formation is going to be completely different. They had to move from almost like a 4-4-2 to like a 4-5-1, didn't they? Because Torres had to play up top on his own, and they had to support him. And they mucked it around a little bit. And in the end, they were worthy winners, but they only won 1-0. You know, it's a goal.
But it was a real one-sided 1-0 against Germany.
That's what I'm saying. So they put it through, and it didn't affect them at all, which is fantastic.
And that's unusual against Germany. They will normally rally if they're 1-0 down in a final.
I think officially Xavi was player of the tournament. Who was your guys?
Oh, Xavi was awesome.
I thought Senna. holding it all together for Spain was absolutely
fantastic. He was important, definitely. Maybe I think Arshavin was fantastic.
Arshavin disappeared against Spain though. I thought he wasn't.
I just thought they sounded him out.
He just ran out of steam. But I mean, tell you who else was brilliant, especially in the early stages, was Wesley Snipes.
He's amazing. Robin as well. Just it was really good to see him just
that
fit
goal
in,
was
on
cool.
form.
The weird thing
I remember you saying, I think you texted me saying Arjen Robben's just scored one of the most amazing goals like I've seen in ages.
I think it was ridiculous
from like a really really tight angle.
It was strange,
and then I was watching the game as well, and I thought, I haven't seen a game from that tight an angle in ages. And then Robin van Persie scored one exactly the same about 2 minutes later.
Yeah. No, it was a great tournament. I think the good thing about it, right, is that we can judge it without having England in it to sort of judge.
Yeah.
Sometimes it gets a bit of a bad sort of taint. It gets a bit tainty because England went out in the group stage, didn't do too well. They were unlucky as usual.
Foreign sea.
But it does really affect your opinion of it. We haven't got that.
We can see it from a neutral point of view.
It's not much tainted like Scott's disappointed.
we can say, do you know what? I really enjoyed that. And there was literally no game that I wasn't happy about watching. Do you know what I mean? Even the sort of, I don't know, there was always games also that would be like, oh, is that going to be any good on paper? Mm. And it'd be like a game like Germany Poland, which the rivalry was fantastic. It was really intense.
The Turkey Czech Republic game as well. My God.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, the Germany Poland game, just to go back to it, was the subtext there. You know that Podolski scores. He's actually Polish. It had everything. It really did. You know.
Yeah.
And also it had the worthy winners. I mean, we thought Germany might fluke it in the final, which would be a real shame.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And another thing is Italy and France completely misfired.
France were abysmal. Domenech proposing to his wife like when they went out and keeping his job afterwards.
It's just strange. Giving a new contract to boot. Yeah, it was strange.
And she didn't star say, signs, all that business.
I mean, not picking players. I mean, it was obvious.
How did Mexis not get in that side?
Unbelievable. And Diarra didn't get a look in either. They had nothing in midfield. Mm. Diarra didn't get a look in.
I don't think Clichy or Sagna were even in the squad either.
He didn't pick Mexis.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he didn't pick Mexis in the squad. You know, centre half for Roma, who just missed out on the Serie A title, and Boomsong got in.
Mm. Boomsong?
Yeah, unbelievable.
His name is Boomsong. It's a ridiculous.
So, what would be your heart of the year, mate?
Well, I was privileged enough to be at the African Cup of Nations.
Of course.
Yeah, so at the start of the year in January.
Yuppie yuppie.
And thank you very much from our sponsors there. and it was, it was amazing. It was because normally, you know, the tournaments that we follow very closely are the European Championships, like we've just said, and the World Cup.
Yeah.
Whereas the African Cup of Nations, it is a massive tournament like that, but it's a bit more rough around the edges, you know, and it was nice to see that, and especially up close as well. Although, I mean, some of the games in the capital, Accra, the state of the pitch was abysmal.
Yeah.
The grass was so long.
I remember seeing that in the opening game. Actually.
It was, disgraceful. You know, when Sean Wright Phillips and Mika Richards were talking about in Russia on the plastic pitch, where they'd go to knock the ball and then run onto it, and they said it just held up a little bit.
Mm.
This was simply insane. And this is the first game of the tour. I did enjoy the tournament. I'm starting off by caning the pitch.
I enjoy it. I say why I enjoy it.
But especially for the pace of African football too. Yeah. Maybe they did that to slow it down because they thought the players might run off the pitch. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a strange one. It is a funny one, but I really enjoy it.
That's a really avoidable error as well. It's not like you can't do anything about it.
It's an absolute fundament.
They could have
sold. Is that a word? That's amazing.
Fundament?
I've never heard it. That's fundamental.
Rhyme is saying for condiment, but you know, which is relevant. But
you set the precedent.
Yeah. But it was an error that could be solved at half time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You
know, they could have even stopped the game perhaps.
I think, you know, the power and the pace of the game, and some goals were spectacular. Mm. And
Menucho, is it Menucho, the Man United player?
Yeah,
Man
Golem Trap. Yeah,
absolutely. He scored two absolute thunderbolts, you know.
Well, Bentari scored
it. Well, in the first game, they were all over them. It was 1-1, and had they not have won that game, it would have been absolutely terrible. Yeah. Montari just absolutely.
He's got some left pick on him, he has.
You know, it's nice to see him doing well at Inter as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And
Zidane as well, the Egyptian player.
Well, he scored probably the goal of the tournament for me. Lovely celebration.
He is a magnificent player. Listen, it was a great tournament. The reason I watched a lot more of it, one, because I knew you were going over there, and also two, because of the show. And whereas in previous tournament African Cups of Nations, I wouldn't have watched as much of it for a couple of reasons. One, because a lot of the of games during the day. Two, it's during the regular season here, so you don't maybe get. I mean, it's no excuse, but you know how it goes. So I absolutely loved it. I mean, you don't want to sound patronising, but I'll tell you what, there's only a matter of time before an African side really stake a serious claim for the World Cup.
Yeah,
I mean, they get.
Definitely.
I don't just mean get to the quarters. I seriously think we'll see an African side in the cup in the final. Before long, if not 2010, when it's in Africa, which would be massive.
Best chance in 2010.
Yeah. I think it's personally, I think it's too soon. I think the chips have to fall for them. I think they have to have a special group of players at the time.
Look at Ghana.
Well, it's the Ivory Coast as well. I mean,
yeah, but I can't see teams like that just yet. Unlocking someone like Spain.
Egypt off the back of two successful tournament wins.
True, yeah. No, Egypt, I think, are a good side, but they're not firing on all cylinders at this present moment.
When you look at a player like Amir Zaki, who comes to the Premiership, he's absolutely banging him in. He's going to have another season and a half's experience.
We should be embarrassed
European
of how much
league.
Of an unknown quantity he was.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's 25, 26?
Wasn't he statistically the best striker in the world through his international strike rate? Some weird anomaly like that.
Mm. Listen, you're right, mate. It was a great tour. It's a real. I mean, it's easy to forget it now because we had Euro 2008. But you know, absolutely.
Well, what was nice about the African Cup of Nations is I said, you know, it's a little bit more kind of rough around the edges. But it is so nice. It was so nice to go there and to have the privilege of going there and going to one or two of the matches and being on the streets with all the fans and so on, because there was a far more genuine. What would be the word? Kind of a realism about it. You know, the players and the fans are much closer than they are in Europe.
Well, we saw that when we went to Craven Cottage.
Well, I was going to say, we saw Ghana play Mexico, you know, and there was a real connection between the fans and the players.
Yeah.
Because the players, a lot of them, are basically fans who have just happened to have turned out good, you know, on the football pitch. And you do get the odd one like Michael Essien, who's kind of like, man, look at him representing us in one of the top leagues in the world. And they're really proud of that. And Essien was fantastic in that tournament. He went back there and he's really like, they don't shy away, the big players. They're kind of like, yeah, I'm one of the big men. Everyone's looking to me. It's like, come on, lads. But we're all in this together.
It almost means more to them. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a lot of the players like Marcel Desailly and recently George Boateng, who opted to play for Holland.
Mm.
And he could have played for one of the West African nations, and Desailly could have played for Ghana, but he obviously chose to play for France. And they said, actually, if it were nowadays, they would play for Ghana or one of their other respective nations. But it was absolutely superb. And the fans, you know, it's just a celebration of football. It just, you cut away a lot of the crap of the fat cats, the commercial stuff, and so on, which of course is inevitable if the game's going to get big. You know, let's not be naive.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't make it, you know, right. You know,
no.
And it was just nice to strip it all down. And I mean, Samuel Eto'o was fantastic. You know, he was there. Cameroon were getting battered by Egypt. You know, he could have just stood up front and gone, well, bloody hell, where are my Barcelona teammates here? And no, he didn't. He grabbed the ball. He scored a couple of goals. And every time he scored, he ran in, grabbed the ball, straight back to the halfway line. You know, I'm leading the line here for my country, you know. And it was absolutely fabulous to see.
Well, I mean, it gets to the point now where what we can say, honestly, with the African Cup of Nations, which maybe we couldn't say certainly 10 years ago, is that the bottom line is, you know, a lot of the world's best players are now playing
Africa.
Yeah. And that's the natural progression. That's why I'm saying it won't be long before we see a World Cup winning
absolutely
team.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, if I was to pick, you know, five off the top of my head, you know, Michael Essien, Samuel Eto'o, Didier Drogba, you know, Yaya Toure, all these sort of players really are genuinely playing at the very top level. And are,
well,
in some cases, are the first name on the team sheet. In Didier Drogba's case traditionally, and Yaya Toure's case,
well,
they're always going to play.
Look at South America. Hardly any of the players in the national sides, in the big sides, like Brazil and Argentina, obviously, actually play in the country.
No.
And the same thing's happening in Africa. A lot of players are going out to Europe. They're getting better, and it's the same thing.
I mean, so
how good would it be if an African side won the World Cup?
It would be absolutely amazing. And I think that the African football has come along. Yes. A lot of the sides have still got to learn a lot. I think that, you know, when I was there, I actually played a bit of football myself, as you know, and some of the teams that you'd play against, and even kind of looking at elements of the national side, there is a naivety there.
Oh, that's right.
But which they are addressing in a lot of places. They can be a little bit gung-ho. That's why I just think that perhaps 2010's coming along at, I hope not, but it might just be coming along slightly early.
I just think
teams like your traditional Spain and Italy and so on and so forth, I just think they're just, they can be smart when they need to be smart. Now, unless in the next year and a bit, new managers do their homework.
There's just a balance to be struck, mate. You can do what you do if you're Italy and the famous Barry Davis, they will not learn, that sort of thing. You can be that far in the scale, or you can be the African in the scale.
Yeah.
And the trick is to find a little balance. Now, where your balance is dependent on how you play and what personnel you have. But listen, Brazil didn't get what they were by knocking a goal and sitting back, mate. So it's not necessarily valid to that extent.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a balance to be
sure. Yeah, I mean, I was being a bit general there. But, I mean, a lot of their players, I mean, the talent in, the pool of talent in that continent is unbelievable, and it's such a shame that they don't have the resources to a lot of it will get missed.
They love football more than any, apart from Brazil and possibly Argentina. The African nations love football more than any other area.
And the reason is a lot of the local guys were saying because it's just sheer escapism.
Of course.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Same as Brazil. It mirrors Brazil.
That's why I love football. Do you know what I mean?
Well, totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you're from Romford. You don't get any worse than that.
That's true.
Yeah, but a lot of them have, you know, the pace, the power, the skill, the technique, it's all there. You know, get a bit more of the intelligence in there, which they're doing. And what's also nice to see is, you know, the Kenya coach came out recently and said, you know, Kenya actually doing pretty well. They're not one of the sides that traditionally do well in Africa. That we need more African coaches getting involved, because sometimes you get people like Bertie Vogts coming and they don't do that well. They're all European name and they go there to. And
the coaches need to grow with the players, of course.
Exactly, yeah, and that's happening more and more. And even, you know, Egypt, look at domestic games. Egypt's local domestic league is getting big attendances now. In Tanzania, they had a big derby a couple of months ago, and it was packed. And normally they said this was incredible. This was while Man United Chelsea was going on.
Oh,
said,
of course.
And they said normally.
It's dead.
But you know, so the tide is definitely turning in Africa.
Also, the African Champions League is getting a lot stronger as well, and a lot more respected. It's just, it is growing. Yeah. I think, sort of, just to kind of wrap up almost, is the African nations is stronger than it's ever been. It's getting a lot more respect. As we've said, there's a lot of really, really good players out there. South Africa's 2 years away, and, you know, and it's in Africa. I think
it's 18 months away.
This is a real chance for those nations to step up and just announce themselves on a world stage to a point where they're going to stay there. And that would be wonderful.
It'd be interesting to see which African teams qualify.
To get an African superpower in world football in general, for one of them to just win a World Cup, that would just change the face of the game internationally for the recent future.
And it'd be the first time a non-European or South American side would have ever won it.
Yeah, and that can only be a good thing.
Cristiano Ronaldo had a decent year. He won the Ballon d'Or, which means Golden Ball.
Yes, it's only fair to talk about him because, I mean, you know, I mean, whatever could have been said about Ronaldo has probably already been said. But we're going to do a look back on the year. We need to acknowledge the fact that he had a magnificent season last season. Yeah, basically,
was it 42 goals?
I think so. Yeah, in all competitions,
phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he missed a lot of the beginning of the season, didn't he? Through suspension,
he missed the first half.
He really caught up pretty quickly.
Month or so,
and he broke George Best's record.
Yeah,
for amount
of goals. Midfielders league goals, is it?
It's just incredible.
Yeah. Listen,
and that was a record that people said, "Oh, that'll never be beaten."
They did say that. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And you've got to take your hat off to him. Listen, you can. He's probably. It's fair to say. I mean, whatever I think about him personally is irrelevant, but he's probably quite a dislikable chap. It's fair to say that. A lot of people, he does seem to be disliked by a lot of people.
He's like a pantomime villain, though, isn't he? The more people play, the better he
gets. I think he thrives on it.
He's the type of player who, if he plays for you, you love him. If he plays against you, you hate him.
But it's,
I think, to be fair, I think it's even starting to creep into the neutral. Just, you know, you've got to step back and go, just applaud. Some of the stuff he's done, it's just phenomenal.
He's one of the most skillful players that's ever graced the planet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, tell me, just out and out skill, the quickness and
his feet,
the dexterity of his feet.
Well, tell me a weakness in his game, apart from arguably slightly his temperament on occasion.
Yeah, even defensively, he's a big guy.
But even like, he's one of the best headers of the ball. Yeah. Would we perhaps call him a winger? But when would you say that about someone who would traditionally play in his position?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I don't think you can fault his game. I think what I will say is, and we've touched on it before, so we'll just touch on it again briefly. Is occasionally at international level in the big game, he does go missing, but he didn't go missing the Champions League final. That's
no,
for sure.
No, and he was still accused of that.
Though he scored.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. To be fair though. he by no means had the best performance of his Manchester United career in that final, but he did pop up with an important goal, and he did contribute. You know,
but that final was there was no kind of one or two players out showing each other. It was just a real kind of stalemate.
In bigger games, there's less space, and his natural game thrives on just creating that space himself and just exploiting it.
So you give him space, he'll just rip you to pieces.
Well, exactly.
I think that's
that, that might be why it appears that he's he sort of drops out.
Well, you've got a different theory on the natural level thing.
I think that's why he thrives in the Premiership, because there is traditionally a bit more space in the league. But when it comes to international football, I just think that he's put out on a bit more on the wing for Portugal, and he's kind of put there. And I wouldn't be surprised if the setup would be you go out there and do your stuff, but remember, you know, Deco's inside of you. You support the front man. You know, if he goes inside, Deco's there. If he goes roaring up front, there's a set striker there, if you like Nuno Gomes or one of the other guys, who is an out-and-out front man who's there. Whereas when he plays for Manchester United, I said that quite slowly, didn't I?
Manchester United.
It's almost like you want to
end. That's right, yeah. When he plays for them, he's just, I think he's given all the freedom he wants.
Yeah, actually, if you've got Cristiano Ronaldo in your side, you've got to give him a free role. But you've got to take advantage of
it. But I don't think he's given that with Portugal. Yeah, I think he's much more.
I don't think, again, I said this last week, unless you're Maradona, you don't get that free role on international level.
Yeah, but I think, I genuinely think Ronaldo's a player worthy of that sort of.
No way.
Yeah. I'm not comparing him to Maradona, but I think he deserves to be given that role. I genuinely do. Look at his record. It's just unbelievable.
True,
but I actually like to see it in comparison to Maradona.
I'll say what the problem is. The problem is between club and international level is, at a club level, if you've got a player like that, you then automatically don't sign another player. What happens at international level is you get a pick of a big pool of players. Mm. So if you've got Deco on your side,
he's going in.
Who's playing a free role?
He's going
in. Who's probably, I mean, you could argue he's a more responsible, like a more rounded player than Ronaldo. You can't then put them both and have them both doing that. So he's then have to. So the natural position for Ronaldo to play is a bit further out wide, and he has to play ever so slightly different role, like Marcus has, maybe supporting a striker, that sort of thing. Whereas at Manchester United, since Van Nistelrooy left, they don't really have an out-and-out striker.
Yeah.
They have players who all chop and change. You've got Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously, Wayne Rooney, most recently Dimitar Berbatov, Ryan Giggs,
Tevez.
All these players, they all
interlinked with each other.
Yeah. So he does employ, he does play a slightly different role. I just think at international level, you very, very rarely have a genuine free role.
But if any player in the world deserves it to at least be experimented with.
or Jimmy Bullard. But we've got to get him in there.
They should call it the Bullard door.
Well,
that would
Jimmy Bullard getting called up for England's a big highlight.
Yeah,
well,
oh, God, yes.
Part of a bigger argument with the Ronaldo winning the Ballon d'Or most recently is I read a really interesting article actually a while ago. I forget who wrote it, but it was are these individual awards necessary? I mean, are they? I mean, okay, maybe they're necessary. Are they as worthy of being put up on such a big stage, and are they as worthy as news items as the credit we give them, given that no one player wins a title, or no one player wins a cup competition, no one player necessarily, I mean, they deserve to be lauded and they deserve their plaudits, but it's a team game, so it's fine having Xavi as your official player of the tournament, but what they normally do, they do an 11, the best 11 of the tournament, which is great. Do we need, I mean, is it necessarily that important?
But it's a showpiece.
But when you're comparing lots of different leagues and stuff like that, is it really that?
Yeah, but football fundamentally is escapism, and it's like the equivalent of the best actor Oscar, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's part of the sort of the showpiece feel of it, and of course it's not necessary, and it does maybe put players on a pedestal more than is necessary. Because you can't ever forget that it's a team game. But there are players like Ronaldo and Messi that, you know, I think it adds to the sort of glamour of it, and people enjoy that. It's like a massive soap opera.
I quite like the thought of a lot of journalists, and then for other awards, you know, players and managers all around the world, and you know, guys who we certainly hope know the sport very well, to choose who do you think's been the best player in the world.
In which case, okay, fine. Then
you do get some funny ones, like Adebayor got a couple of votes and stuff.
They all get votes. Top three, don't you? Yeah. But I mean, that's not.
I think he was about 12 or something.
That's definitely true. But do you think that, in which case, that Ronaldo was a worthy winner of it? Then do you?
Well, I think his own. The competition, I suppose, is Messi and Kaká. Kaká didn't have as good a season as he had.
He obviously won it previously. So
yeah. Kaká's not been really playing on an international level.
But nor is Ronaldo.
Well, he was at the Euros.
Yeah, but he wasn't that good.
No, but he's been playing. Kaká's not been turning up for the qualifiers for Brazil.
No, okay. I mean, for me, I think for that reason, which you're right to say, do you give it to Messi or do you give it to Ronaldo?
I think either's a worthy winner.
What can you choose between them? Yeah. Though, you know?
Both. I mean, maybe. I don't know. Ronaldo scores more of his head stuff. Like I that. Think he's probably Messi, got more goals. It's so
why
tiny.
Why do you think Messi is a better player?
I just think he's a player who, one, I mean, admittedly, and it's only fair to say, I haven't seen him play as much as Ronaldo for obvious reasons, but I have seen him play enough at international and club level. I think
he's consistent.
He rarely goes missing, if ever.
No, he runs games. He runs big.
He runs a whole pitch.
Yeah,
which you very, very rarely do you see a player do that.
For also, a guy who doesn't play down the middle as well.
Definitely. No, he also has got his head right. Yeah. Now the treatment he got on El Clasico recently was absolutely appalling.
Yeah, disgraceful.
You know, that was, and we're talking about Real Madrid here. We're not talking about a third division cup side. Yeah, you need to kick lumps out of players to get a result. This is Real Madrid, and he was being kicked from pillar to post.
Established international,
and he was still had the temperament in the final minute of the game to score the goal which effectively sealed it. You know,
yeah.
And you know, it goes a lot to say that you know Real Madrid's best players in that game were Casillas, Metzelda, and Cannavaro.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Messi ripped the piece at the time.
Talking about the temperament, and so Messi's definitely a more likeable character.
Mm.
And, I mean, you know, even after, and people go on about, still hark back to the England-Portugal business in World Cup 2006.
But it's not about that, though.
No, of course it's not about that, but it was interesting to see that the French fans were booing him in the semi-final after that, but that, we're going back too far. But what is interesting, Graham Souness said this, he said, Messi, when he gets lumps kicked out of him and so on, he just kind of, okay, he might show a little bit of frustration. That's going to happen, but he gets on with it, and the old cliche, lets his feet do the talking.
Yeah.
Ronaldo does that to an extent, but sometimes he throws his arms up in the air. He starts going on about the referee.
Let me give you a scenario to justify why I'd pick Lionel Messi over Cristiano Ronaldo.
Go on.
And it's this: you take a derby, a fierce derby. So you take Barcelona Real in Spain with Messi, and you take, I don't know, Manchester United, Manchester City, just for an example, in England. Okay, you've got a pressure cooker atmosphere, a lot at stake. You know, I mean, Barcelona, that game, that El Clasico recently was really important in the context of the title race. So even though it's quite early on, now you've got a pressure cooker atmosphere, you get a lot of stake, and who would you take? Okay, would you pick Messi? Would you back Messi to have a good game, or would you back Cristiano Ronaldo? I'd back Messi every time. His temperament is a lot better. Mm. He may not get quite as many goals, okay, but you've got to remember, he is younger, for one. Only slightly younger, but he is younger. And I think his temperament is different class. I think he's a genuine. Listen, it gets banded about all the time, but he is the genuine heir apparent to Maradona.
Yeah, well, he's got that same low centre of gravity, and he's surprisingly like built for such a small guy, Lionel Messi.
They've got a good enough team in Argentina. They've got a good enough.
Yeah, I wanted to say this.
Yeah, for him to genuinely get his hands, grab a tournament, maybe 2010, but the scruff of the neck and win it.
I mean, you've got to remember how young Messi is, and then you've got to look at the fact you've got Kun Aguero and Gonzalo Higuain coming through as well. They are both immense.
They've got great players, right? Mascherano all over the place.
Well, Mascherano's still pretty young as well.
Gago as well, right?
Tevez.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that I thought was quite nice this year was that Paraguay finished the year at top of the South American qualifier.
Yeah.
Doing really well, and again, that's another spanner in the works. I mean, I think, you know, Brazil and Argentina will qualify.
This does tend to happen though in qualifying for these South American sides.
Because, as you say, like, Kaká has not gone back. Yeah. And, like, it's almost like they don't take it seriously in a weird way because they know they can get through.
But Kaká's not been playing. Ronaldinho's not been playing. All Brazil's big players not really been playing. Anderson's gone out there, but Brazil's big players have gone.
Anderson's not a big player for Brazil.
No, not at all.
No, but he plays for a big side though.
Of course, yeah. You know, occasionally.
He's a name, but. You know, I watched Ecuador go away to Argentina, and it wasn't the most riveting games. Ecuador scored a superb goal, one of the goals of the season for me. What a beautiful move and a great finish. And Argentina equalised with about 30 seconds left in Buenos Aires.
I remember
thinking, it really hit home to me that, and I've said this before, that world football is levelling off. You don't get the big sides bossing it all the time anymore.
Champions League as well.
Well, we can move on to that. You know, and that to me is quite an exciting thing. I mean, look at, and you talk about the Champions League. Panathinaikos finished top of their group above Inter Milan.
Yeah.
And Famagusta, an orthosis Famagusta.
They only just won out
from Cyprus. We just missed out by two points. They finished 2 points below Inter. Now, it was a low... the points was quite low in that group.
Yeah.
Because it was shared out.
Yeah. Well, they finished above Werder Bremen, didn't they?
No, they were...
But it was close, wasn't it?
It was very close. Yeah. It was like six, seven, eight and 10 points or something. You know, I mean, Cluj, okay, they did finish...
But they surprised a few people,
they
though.
Did, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they nearly rocked
Chelsea. Being Roma.
Yeah.
In Italy.
They did okay against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge as well,
You know, and I think to me that's really hit home this year as well. And the year started well with the African Cup of Nations.
Well, let's hope that continues.
And absolutely, and I think that can only be good.
And we may be staring down... personally for Jimbo it won't be great, but we may be staring down the barrel of a breakup of the big four in quotes, so to speak, as well. So that'll be a good thing as well, I think, for the game in general.
Well, it wasn't so long ago that people spoke about big two, and before that it was a big five. These things do regularly change. They change in cycles. I think we're coming towards the end of it as well.
But the danger was, with all the money in the game now, it was going to really run away. It was going to become a new SPL, which no one wanted to see. So hopefully Villa will break into that. And not because I've got anything particular against Arsenal anyway, but Arsenal have made mistakes. They've not strengthened. We talked about that till the cows come home, so we won't do that again. But if Villa break into that top four, like Everton did, but I think Villa's are more of a genuine... Yeah. It's not a freak season. It's more of a genuine sort of progression under a good manager with a good young side. That can only be a great thing for the game.
I'd go as far as that. The interesting thing for Arsenal. You're going to kick up the arse
for next year. Possibly, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, chaps. Well, I think we've mentioned some of our highlights there. 2008. What about 2009? What do we hope 2009 will bring to the Ramble Table? And it's all about the Ramble Table.
Yeah.
This is something we were discussing earlier. And
I'll go first this time, because you went first last time. Do you mind?
No.
I'll allow that. Yeah, go on.
Thanks very much, Mark. I should have asked Marcus. It's not your decision.
Yeah, no.
It is. I'd like...
Actually, no. I want to go first now.
Okay. No, I'll go first. Arm wrestle? I'd definitely win.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready. I'd like to see James Richardson back on terrestrial television, and I'd like to see
eating an ice cream in a forecourt.
I'd
somewhere.
Like to see.
Oh, him, no, you're talking.
I'd like to see him doing BBC News at 9
the 6 o'clock news.
Running away, it'd be brilliant.
Actually, 10 o'clock news. I'm not home at six.
I'd like. All serious though, James Richardson belongs. It's a mystery to me.
He belongs in the living room.
It's a mystery to me why James Richardson hasn't been... the only thing I can think of, he must have turned it down. Or they must... The people who are making these decisions at ITV and at the BBC and at Sky must be so monumentally myopic that they can't see a genuine talent and a genuine authority on the game.
Boys club, isn't it? Because it's all ex-players, essentially.
James Richardson, tell you what he is, he ticks all the boxes. He's a genuine authority on the game. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, of course.
He's a respected journalist. No doubt about that. He knows a lot about world football, not just British football, world football, and not only that, he's fucking funny as well.
Yeah, he is.
He wears baldness brilliantly.
What more do you want? Yeah. He makes us all feel better about hairlines. Well, Pete, he's not here, so he's a bit of a dick.
The only thing, that outside of Channel 4 and the current podcast he's doing for The Guardian.
Don't listen to that.
Yeah, don't.
I love that podcast.
What am I doing?
It's brilliant.
I had a John Watson moment there. Where am I?
In all seriousness, though, the Guardian's football weekly is brilliant. I don't think we've got to say that.
Yeah.
We wouldn't want this.
Yeah, download that one as well.
Yeah. Exactly. There's no limit. We wouldn't be arrogant enough to say we compete with them. They're fantastic. And James Richardson makes that show.
Yeah, of course he does.
So.
In the same way I do.
Yeah.
But, don't hire him. Okay.
They're calling you the heir apparent to James Richardson.
Yeah, that's nonsense, I'll tell you that. I'm the heir apparent to John Barnes, maybe, on Channel 5. But
Who was also in the Ramble Hall of Famer.
He's
not a Hall of Famer, but he's been on the show.
Technically.
Yeah.
We got him
speaking
on the
very quickly.
But Richardson, the only time he did something with those things on Terrestrial was he was a journalist reporting at the World Cup 98.
That's right. I tell you what. I'm sure. Listen, I don't know the guy. None of us have ever met him. I'm sure he's very happy what he's doing. He's got a great little setup at the Guardian. He's doing. I mean, it's a shame he's not doing the games on Satanta a bit more. But he is on telly at least. So
Want to see more of him, and that's fine.
Do you know something? These days it's not as important. It's not terrestrial telly with the internet, that sort of stuff. But we at least get the best of him when we can. And whether it's going to be, I just like to think.
How come he's never on Sunday Supplement?
He's obviously not in the Sky. He's not on the Sky Gravity Train.
He's a host, isn't he? I don't think he's way
too good. I think he's good. I think his speciality is a host, but I think he could do that pundit role no problem.
Yeah, if he was a football player,
He was the best thing about Italian,
That's when the game. That's when this argument, which is always held by ex-pros, is that you can't tell us about football because you've never played the game.
Yeah.
I say to you, here's Lee Dixon, right? Here's James Richardson, right? Yeah. If I said that to an alien from another planet and then said, which one do you think we should play football? I'll tell you, you'd say every time, James Richardson. Yeah.
And man's in the same vein, here's Loro, here's Guillaume Balague.
Yeah, exactly.
Guillaume Balague. Yeah, exactly. Awesome.
Now you're talking. So there we go. I mean, that's what I'd like to see. James Richardson back on television. Well, just, no, he's on television, but just on television a bit more. Enriching...
Given the credit he deserves, I think, is what we're hitting
enriching at. More football fans' lives all over the world. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, kind of what we're doing.
That's what I'm asking for Christmas.
It's a really pedantic thing, and it doesn't concern Arsenal, so it shouldn't really bother me as much as it does. But, and I know they are rebranding it, but the UEFA Cup is such a ridiculous tournament at the moment. It needs to be sorted out.
Bring back
Cup Winners' Cup. Validated. Yeah, the Cup Winners' Cup got sort of melted into it. Yeah. What, like, basically, it starts off, I think there's 40 teams in it. They go through the group stages. Two teams go out of five team groups, so it's harder to go out of it, you could argue, than it is to go through it. Yeah. Pop still managed it. Then the Champions League rejects come in, there's 32 teams in the second round. You lose eight teams.
Yeah.
It's just sort it out, it's so complicated.
I don't think it's necessary. I always know it, you boys. I was too young to really know which tournament was officially the most important, but I always rated the Cup Winners' Cup much more higher than the UEFA Cup.
Yeah, I think it will.
Some of my favourite moments, apart from obviously the European Cup, some of my favourite moments out of those two tournaments have all been Cup Winners' Cups.
Mm. English teams did traditionally do better.
Yeah, Chelsea, Arsenal did very well in it. It was a brilliant tournament. I don't fully know, I'd have to check it out, but I don't know why it was stopped and why it got incorporated into the UEFA Cup. It's going to be called the Europa League.
They're still doing weird stuff like Cup Winners from certain countries get it, and there's fair play places, and just, how many places are there?
It's all about money, mate. It's all about money. It's just a shame.
They're trying to shake it up to make it more respectable in the shadow of the Champions League.
But they're still massively convoluting it. It's not. I read about it today, and I couldn't tell you the full extent of how you qualify for it, because there are just so many different ways. Now they're putting the Intertoto Cup in with it as well. Oh, they're just squeezing all these different competitions in it. It's just
but the UEFA Cup. UEFA Cup back in the day used to have an interesting format in the final. It used to be a two-legged affair
for
the final.
Yeah,
and home and away, there was no neutral stadium.
Yeah.
So I think it was only when the Cup Winners' Cup was scrapped and it was merged with the UEFA Cup that the final was over one game in a neutral venue.
I just wonder whether it's because of the saturation level of media coverage of football these days, whether it just whether it's always been it's just because we always used to have obviously previously the Intertoto Cup. We had like the Anglo-Italian Cup as well, which is like an English
Anglo-Italian
that was always on the go, but it just wasn't covered as much because football wasn't as covered as much by the media but then now the internet, things like that, so I don't know whether it's just an extension of that. But I think European football, it gets to the point now where you wonder. You see this, but I'll tell you what's worth pointing out is that Rafa Benitez, I think, has just officially become the most successful Liverpool manager in Europe of all time. Really? Now, okay, in terms of games won in Europe. Yeah. Now, is it fair to judge that alongside their triumphs in the European Cup of yesteryear?
Yeah.
Given a lot of the games would have been dead rubbers in the Champions League, a lot of them would have been against inferior opposition because of this fascination by the game's governing bodies to get as many teams in Europe as possible and just shoehorn and force as many as you can.
Yeah.
Whereas previously, only the top teams would be in there. Yeah. So I'd like to see, I don't know if I'm being old-fashioned or whether we're just getting old, but I'd like to see it'd be a real achievement to do something in Europe.
Yeah,
I'm not saying, listen, we'll get Liverpool fans in the mail in like always saying, oh, you hate it when you can in Liverpool. But I don't mean to have a pop at Liverpool per se, but I'd like to know whether Liverpool fans would judge that Champions League triumph as prestigiously as they would.
You know, I reckon they would.
They probably would, but I mean, is it the same thing though? The point I'm trying to make is there's so many teams in there now. How many teams go into the Champions League?
Well, exactly.
It's 32, isn't it? 32. How many teams go into the UEFA Cup?
300.
That's 40. So that's 72 teams in Europe.
Yeah.
That's enough for almost four leagues.
But over two trophies. Why did they scrap the Cup Winners' Cup?
To make the UEFA Cup more confusing, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, this is it though. To me, four English teams going into the Champions League. Okay, you know, you might have third and fourth and do a couple of rounds before. But to me, open up another out and out knockout tournament like the Cup Winners' Cup, and don't make the Champions League this massive thing where if you don't start qualifying for it, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah. Once again, and it's almost cliche to say, but it is true. It's to do with money.
Clubs.
they have to, some of them have to qualify for the Champions League. Their business models are built around it. They'll like they'll really suffer without it.
And well, look what happened to Leeds.
It's too dependent on it.
But a good old fashioned knockout tournament, you know, the UEFA Cup used to be. Now they do the little leagues and
stuff. Well,
stuff.
I can see UEFA Cup.
I can
that,
see the I can see the point of the Cup Winners' Cup. Listen, you've got some teams. All the teams, obviously, as it's named. They win the cups in their home team, their home nation. Now, teams who win the cups generally quite exciting. It's knockout. You have to be good. You have to be.
You've got to be good at knockout.
Yeah. So if you then take that and translate it across Europe and say all the teams who've won the cup, right, in this nation, the equivalent of the FA Cup in whatever country it is, they all go into a tournament. I can see the novelty and the entertainment value in that.
Totally.
The UEFA Cup is just a sort of inferior version of the Champions League.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's all it is.
So it's just money.
It's from some weird alternative universe where nothing makes sense. The UEFA Cup is just mental.
I hope you're happy, Michelle.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
No, it's but I hope thousands he's happy of he's people's collective fault, isn't
you're
it?
Not you're not finding me defending Michelle Platini. It's really not his fault, you know.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, he could. I mean, because if he cancelled the UEFA Cup, he'd be cutting his own throat, you know. So it's obviously he can't do it.
But yeah, I just think it's a weak reformat.
I think you're probably right, but when Arsenal in it next season, I'm sure you'll like
I think in 2009, I'd certainly like to see, and I'm sure you lovely chaps would like to see the same thing, is more English players going abroad. In fact, English players going abroad. But
absolutely.
More, you know, you've got the Adam Johnson and Real Madrid stuff, which is quite exciting. But
Pete told me to tell you that he'd like to see Mike Ashley go abroad and never come back.
Yeah. I'm sure that's a valid point, but I don't think Mike Ashley will be playing any kind of sport in the foreseeable future.
You're probably right, mate.
But to English players to go abroad, I think that would help our national team.
Absolutely.
I'd just like to
why
know.
Not? As well, just why not?
Exactly.
Why not Micah Richards at Sevilla or just like Stuart Downing at Lazio? Just why not? It's so common for players from all over the rest of the world.
And you get these. I can never see a bad side to it. What could possibly be bad about that?
Yeah.
You know, not only will the players get to experience new cultures, new football, become more rounded as players and individuals, but I'll tell you what, the people who watch football in this country will be much more inclined to watch other football and not be so self-obsessed.
I think maybe it is a cultural thing, whereas in other countries it is just natural to speak a few languages and stuff like that.
Well, we're an island, mate. It's an island culture. So listen, when I've been to different places in Europe, as I'm sure we all have, but. It's a friend of mine lives in West Germany, not far from Mönchengladbach, and he pops across to Holland all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't even mean anything. He just drives across there, and he's in Holland.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, all these people who live around that sort of area, the Germans, it's not far to go to Belgium or to Holland or to France.
Yeah.
You know, because they're on the very west border of Germany. So that's only a good thing. So obviously, these sort of players are going to be happy to move abroad.
Yeah.
And also, we need to point out though, that England, whether we think the Premier League's the best in the world or whatever, those sort of cliches, it is a very good league.
Yeah.
So
they
don't always need to move elsewhere to find better football like they do maybe in France or Germany. Because the leagues there aren't strong.
That is a good point, but you know, I would have loved to have seen.
I'm agreeing with you though. I would have loved
to have seen Lampard gone to Inter Milan. I'd love to have seen that. I mean, I will actually say that another thing, you know, I know we've done the 2008 roundup, but it was good to see Frank Lampard becoming turning it round, especially for England, and becoming the player again that we all know he can be.
Mm.
I think it would be great to see young English talent playing for clubs abroad, because I mean, how many times do we get young players from all over? I mean, look at Arsenal's a great example, obviously, from other countries. Oh, that's great. Wouldn't it be great if I don't know, Sean Wright Phillips or other exciting talent who went out there, you know, Aaron Lennon, perhaps maybe not good enough at the moment, but you know, David Bentley or you know, Jonathan Woodgate's had a go, but it didn't quite work out for him. But just other English players going abroad and just thinking, oh, how are they getting on?
Is there a single player in the squad now that's playing abroad? I don't think there is there? I don't think it's been this barren for a long time. There was Paul Ince at Inter, there was Steve McManaman at Real Madrid, there were players dotted about here and there, but I don't think there's any at the moment.
Yeah, but you say that, and you are right, but it still goes back a bit. In World Cup 98, the only two sides to have players, their whole squad made up of players who play all in their national league were England and Iran. and Iran players weren't allowed to leave the country.
Yeah,
so at the time, so you know, that was in 98. So that was 10 years.
I think I'd like just to expand your point about players going abroad. I'd like to see them go abroad maybe at the earlier stages of their career. Well, I know it is tough when you're young, you know. We all remember what it was like going away to university the first time, whatever, that sort of thing. But and that was tough enough, but to go abroad would be difficult.
But a lot of the other foreign lads manage it.
But this is the cultural thing I was talking about earlier. Yeah. They already know a lot of different languages. This is probably a strange comparison.
Yeah.
But to consider the kind of attitude of your typical young English player. Did any of you see any of Coke Zero's Wayne Rooney's streak striker superstar on ice?
Yeah. Right?
My God, the attitude on all of them. It's just unbelievable. Just absolutely unbelievable. They're all properly just like... The guy that won literally just turned around and walked away for a bit. It's just like, what are you doing, mate?
Yeah.
Just... come on.
Yeah.
Who acts like that? Fuck off down the park if you're going to be like that. It's just...
I know what you mean. I just wanted to say that. I mean
There's a kind of basketball.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, like a white men come.
Skins and shirts, hustle!
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm sure there are kids like that in Europe as well.
I know, but it does seem prevalent.
I know what you mean. But listen, I think I'd like to see what I think happens is, and I'll give you a few examples, especially at teams like Man United, the top teams, or Arsenal. They'll get released by Manchester United. Now, how many good players have we seen come from Man United, for an example, and now applying their trade in the Championship? And you know, the most recent example of that is Chris Eagles. He went to Burnley. He's a really good player for Burnley. Yeah. They're doing really, really well this season. He's been a big part of that. Yeah. You know? He's a good player.
Yeah.
I think he would probably be good at somewhere like, Sunderland now or something. But when he went, when Man United, it was clear that Man United didn't want to keep him. I mean, I'm assuming a little bit, but I'm pretty sure he was pretty narrow-minded. He was like, right, I've got to find another club. I bet my bottom dollar his agent or him didn't even consider going somewhere like, you say, Sevilla, or somewhere like...
Well, Sevilla's probably a little bit...
But you know what I mean,
though. But I know what you're saying.
But they might want him. They might see something in him that someone else hasn't seen. Mm. And you know, how many times have we seen players not
do that? But why not go to a French Premier League?
Look at Samuel Eto'o wasn't fancied by Real Madrid, and he turns up at Barcelona.
Yeah, no, totally.
There's always a possibility.
Well, the other way around, you've got Saviola. It's just... I think they're overpriced is one thing, purely because of this. They stay in England, they're so valuable.
One thing that we can say, though, is I know that Glenn Hoddle at the moment has got a camp out in Spain, maybe, and they take on players who have been rejected from clubs, and it's almost a kind of a refuge for all these guys. Mm, and they take them, and he says they usually do about 6 weeks or maybe a touch longer.
Do they get to the root cause of what they did in another life, sort it out, and then just move them on as players?
I'm not sure, go on. And it's not just English players, it's other players from abroad. He says, but like some of the English lads, you know, the weather's, it's nice weather to play, and that makes a difference as well. Mm. But it's just to kind of make these guys a bit more aware, perhaps even culturally, because football can be, there is football culture on the pitch, you know, you see it with how different sides play and so on, and the more you know, the better. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And Hoddle's doing this, and I think that's a really good idea. And he says, you know, even given 6 weeks with some of these lads, he said, the improvement after 6 weeks is unbelievable.
Mm.
You know, so I think that's a really good initiative.
Absolutely, I've got no objection to that whatsoever. I think the point, Jimbo, with the transfer fee thing is valid in some cases, but a lot of these kids are 17, so they're just short of signing pro contracts, and they're not offered contracts. Listen, it's a big thing for an English kid at 16 or 17 to go abroad. I understand that, but people do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not the worst thing in the world. They're going to look after you. I mean, I would imagine a footballer gets pretty well looked after compared to most other professions. So, yeah, I'd like to see that as well. I think it's a really good point, and hopefully we will see that in 2009. But I do think, like we said before, it's a cultural thing. But it's something that can only benefit us.
I think maybe it's where kids are looking up to players and they're all playing in the Premier League. There's not someone where you think, he's my favourite player.
Listen, the Premier League's a good league. The Premier League attracts a lot of good players. Arguably the top players in the world. Okay, now
and Jimmy Bullard's here.
Of course. Yeah. That's a big draw. But I don't know if you guys remember, but I mean, 10 years ago, a lot of players didn't come to the Premier League. You know, maybe a little bit less than that.
Bergkamp and Zola were sort of the real front runners.
You had the Benito Carbones and the Decanos, but they weren't quite at that level. But I mean, it used to be a place where players would come towards the end of their career.
Yeah.
But it's really turned around now. It's to do with money, it's to do with the global appeal of the Premier League. So there is also that to throw into it. If you've got a French kid, okay, you've got a couple of good teams in France. Lyon, for example, they always do really well, and they're always a good side. But
there's not that many other teams that are really that good. They're really going to compete for an awful lot of things. Whereas in the Premier League, it's a little bit different. So there is that as well. But then again, that makes it harder. So paradoxically, it would be easy for you to go abroad because it's not as easy to get into a side in England.
I think that's a great point. I think that's something I'd like to see a lot of as well. A lot more of as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much for listening. That was the Christmas special, done and dusted for another year. Thanks for.
I love the way we call it a Christmas special without actually doing anything until Christmas. It'll work, it's fine.
Yeah. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address has changed. It's now podcast@thefootballramble.com. We have the same myspace.com/footballramble. We have a group on Facebook and we have the website, which is thefootballramble.com.
With regular news updates by me.
Yes.
I've done two this week.
Wow.
Yeah, so
good lad, good lad.
Worth looking at.
All it leaves me to say is goodbye, James.
Or goodbye.
Jim. Goodbye, Lukey.
Goodbye, and very happy new year to you all, and a Merry Christmas.
Mm. And don't be that bloke who kills his wife and kids on Christmas Day, because there's always happens. Don't be that person.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, listen. we're all off to Paul Peach Cracker. Cheers.